Human Exceptionalism and Assisted Suicide. That is our topic during this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Wesley J. Smith, who's an author, one of the best out there, really, a bioethicist on the whole issue of life, the value of life. One of his classic books is called The Culture of Death. Wesley, it's great to have you back on the program.
Thank you, Jerry, and hello to your listeners.
Sure, and it seems as if there are different states where they're grappling with the issue of, you know, assisted suicide or the right to die or that kind of thing, and it's a mixed bag. Some will vote for it, others will vote against it. I saw an article in the JAMA, in the American Medical Association, where they were coming out against assisted suicide. Of course, you know, maybe they were read between the lines, but what are your thoughts about the kind of the mishmash of line of laws here and so forth?
Well, you have a concerted effort to legalize assisted suicide throughout the West, and a lot of this is incredibly well financed by people like George Soros, who pour millions and millions and millions of dollars into this very dark agenda item for reasons known only to them. We have in the United States, two states this year have legalized it, assisted suicide. New Jersey and Maine just did it, for a total of 8 states plus the District of Columbia. But the untold story that the media generally ignores is how often states refuse to legalize it. And the issue here is that the more people understand the truth about assisted suicide and euthanasia, what it is and where it leads, the less they like it. Unfortunately, we have a media situation where 20 years ago, when I first got into this anti-euthanasia work, media would generally be friendly towards assisted suicide, but present both sides in a relatively fair manner. The media today have gone all in on assisted suicide. They present these very emotional stories. They don't present any kind of caveat or authoritative voice, at least that has much to say in opposition, and often there's no opposition at all. So you see this kind of downhill charge for legalizing assisted suicide, and yet in the United States, you still see a lot of resistance. Most states have rejected it, as I said. The American Medical Association has long opposed assisted suicide. After all, it is against the Hippocratic Oath to euthanize or assist the suicide of a patient. And that doesn't always stop medical associations in the sense of what they support or don't support. But the American Medical Association has been stalwart in its opposition because it's not a professional service. Killing somebody or helping to kill them is not professional service. You don't need to be a doctor to do that. And moreover, it's unsafe and dangerous for patients and abandons patients. Well, as you can understand, the same financial pressure that is seeking to force states to legalize it is being brought to bear against organized medicine. And there was a real attempt to force the AMA to go neutral, which is usually where the assisted suicide advocates want medical associations to go, so that they no longer oppose euthanasia and assisted suicide. But the AMA said, no, we're keeping with our opposition. And so that was good news.
Wow. Okay, let me ask you this. When we use the phrase assisted suicide, does that imply doctor-assisted suicide, that somehow the patient will get a doctor's help in killing themselves? Like, oh, okay, here are these pills.
Yeah, as we are using it in the debates, we're not talking about private assisted suicide, perhaps where I put a gun in your hand, put your finger around the trigger and cock the gun, and then you pull the trigger. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about doctors writing lethal prescriptions, meaning prescriptions not intended to cure pain, not intended to help sleep, but intended to cause death, intentional overdoses. That is what is done in the United States. In other countries such as Canada, Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg, they allow active euthanasia. In other words, doctors giving lethal injections. And that is actually, there's a bill passed in Oregon, which has legal assisted suicide. It was the first state to legalize assisted suicide back in 94. And they have a bill that has not yet gone all the way through, but has passed at least one house, that would actually permit active euthanasia in some circumstances in Oregon. So, you know, these bills that you see passed in the United States, for example, the limitation to somebody supposedly with 6 months left to live. By the way, I have a friend who was given 3 months left to live with lung cancer 13 years ago, and they're still alive. He's still alive. So the 6 month left to live thing is almost ridiculous, because usually people don't die by the numbers. And there are people who have actually lived years after receiving lethal prescriptions in Oregon. But people, once it's legalized, people don't care about the abuses. People don't care when the law is violated, because basically what's been stated is it's okay to kill people as an answer to suffering caused by illness. And eventually that leads to disability, being elderly, and so forth. For example, in Belgium and the Netherlands, mentally ill people, people with psychiatric illnesses, attain active euthanasia. And sometimes they go into a hospital, they're killed in the hospital, which is, think about that, being killed in a hospital. And then their bodies are moved 20 feet to a surgical suite and their organs are harvested. So you have psychiatric patients in the Netherlands and Belgium who are being told that their deaths have greater value than their lives. And that can be, for somebody in existential anguish of mental illness, that can be the tipping point that has them say, why don't you kill me so that other people can live with my liver or with my lungs? It's a terrible, cruel abandonment.
Oh, my goodness. I can't help but think of, you know, like in the movie It's a Wonderful Life, you know, you're worth better off dead than alive, George. Or the line in The Tale of Two Cities, you know, it's a far, far better thing that I do than I've ever done before. You know, the climax
and
character.
It's exactly right. And yet this is depicted and painted constantly as compassion. It's actually abandonment. If somebody wants to kill themselves because their business failed, we say, no, let's have suicide prevention. But if they say, oh, but I have cancer, what are we going to start doing? Say, oh, well, in that case, here are your pills.
Yeah.
What does that tell the person with cancer? It tells them that their worst fears are true, that we do think of them as a burden, that we do think that they're not as worthy of being loved, that we will allow them to die in agony and so forth and so on. It is a profound abandonment that we pretend, and the media pretend, and the popular culture and movies and television pretends is respecting patient autonomy and having compassion so they don't suffer. But it's really abandonment most foul.
You know, I remember there was a story out of the Netherlands where it said initially the doctor-assisted suicide or whatever, that the number of people who wanted to be done in by the doctors, suddenly the number actually of people who didn't want that exceeded the number of deaths by these doctors inducing, you know, the suicide. So in other words, it almost went from basically, okay, the patient saying, I want to voluntarily be killed, to people being put to death against their will in hospitals in the Netherlands.
There is some of that in the Netherlands. Not so much people saying, don't kill me, and then they're killed, although there are a few examples of that. But mainly people who have been euthanized, who never asked to be killed, non-voluntary euthanasia. They even have a word for it, or a term for it, in the Netherlands. It's called termination without request or consent. Technically, it's murder, but nothing is ever actually done about it. I mean, if a doctor is ever brought up on charges, it's basically, a nothing penalty. And even then, the medical association, how dare you go after this doctor? You're going to chill people doing euthanasia, which would be a good thing. In the Netherlands, by the way, they also have infanticide, where doctors who kill babies in their cribs, in their bassinets, who are born with serious disabilities or terminal illnesses. So, and it's called, your listeners can actually look it up on the internet, the Groningen Protocol, Groningen. The Groningen Protocol is a bureaucratic test, a checklist that tells doctors which babies they can kill. So you actually have active infanticide in the Netherlands. In Belgium, you have no age limit. So in terms of euthanasia, earlier this year, a report came out that said they've actually euthanized children as young as 9. In Canada, where you have to be 18 to be lethally injected, they're actively preparing to open the door for pediatric euthanasia. Pediatricians have actually volunteered to kill the children when it becomes legal, and they're moving along that same trajectory. Our closest cultural cousins, which is why that's important, because, you know, when I used to say, well, look at the Netherlands, look at Belgium, American assisted suicide advocates would say, oh, well, we'll never do that. You know, that's them. We're America. Well, Canada, our closest cultural cousin, is going in the same direction. And why would that be? It's because once you accept the principle that killing is an acceptable answer to suffering, then the suffering that justifies killing just continually expands. And once a society accepts it generally in terms of popular acceptance, which has happened in Netherlands and Belgium and Canada, I've never seen a country become more enthusiastic about euthanasia than Canada in my life. The Supreme Court mandated it, and the entire society, with the exception of some like Catholic doctors and so forth, said, yeah, let's do it. And when the Catholic doctors sued to say, we shouldn't be forced to kill it, it's a grievous sin for us, or a Christian doctor said, I don't want to have to kill a patient, a court in Ontario, a court of appeals in Ontario, Canada, told doctors who do not wish to participate in euthanasia, do not wish to participate in abortion, do not wish to participate in transgender intervention, such as preventing the normal puberty of a child with gender dysphoria, that either they do it when asked because it's legal, those procedures, or they participate in what's called an effective referral. In other words, the doctor is in charge of procuring the doctor who would do it, which would make that doctor complicit in the act that they have a religious objection to. So Canada is no longer even a free country when it comes to religious liberty, because they're going to force doctors and nurses and others to participate in actions which the doctor deems to be a grievous sin. And that's authoritarianism.
Yeah, you're right. You know, freedom of conscience should never be violated. I don't care where you stand on the spectrum as a general principle.
You know what's ironic is that the Canadian Charter has a stronger protection than the United States First Amendment. The Canadian Charter protects, quote, freedom of conscience and religion, close quote. Our Constitution protects free exercise of religion, which is not nearly as strong or specific. And yet, even though the doctors said in that lawsuit I just referenced that their freedom of conscience and religion were being violated, and the court said, yes, it's true, the court said, however, the right of patients to equal and equitable access to all legal medical services under the single-payer health care plan beats, which isn't in the charter, beats the specific protection of the charter. And if doctors don't like it, they can either become podiatrists or get out of medicine. That's authoritarian. That's the culture of death, because the culture of death brooks no dissent.
Wow. Okay, we have a minute and a half left. I understand there was a story about a teenage girl recently who killed herself. It's my understanding she starved herself to death. This was
in
Europe.
Netherlands.
Okay, tell us about this.
In the Netherlands, there was a young woman, 17, who had been raped at age 14 by two men. And at age 11, she'd been sexually molested, and she was so distraught, she ended up with a PTSD, serious mental illness, serious anorexia. She asked for electroshock therapy to treat her depression. She was turned down because she was too young. And so then she decided to starve herself to death, and doctors helped with palliating the symptoms, and nobody said to these mental health people, hey, wait a second, you won't give her the electroshock, she's starving herself to death. And this girl had even written a best-selling book about her travails. It is a terrible abandonment. And the only reason that came to light is at first some news reporters said that she had been actively euthanized, and she had not been. She'd been abetted, we might say, in starving herself to death. But I know of at least one other case in the Netherlands where a woman with anorexia was assisted in suicide because of her eating disability. And that just shows you where this thing leads.
Wow. All right, we're basically out of time. Let me give your website, discovery.org, for more information. Also, your Twitter handle is at Forced Exit. Wesley J. Smith,
yes,
thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, and I hope people will follow me on Twitter, because I put all my articles up there.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Wesley.
Thank you.